It's that time. Lock and load. The Michael Vary Show is on the air.
Even the liberal Washington Post has a story. Voter ID laws have proved popular despite Democratic arguments that they amount to voter suppression, and some activists have concluded that they do less to suppress the vote than they initially feared. A new report out says 8 in 10 voters agree. 78% say voter ID is reasonable and valid. 77% say campaigns should be funded by candidates and not the government. Both of these contradict what is in H.R. 1, which Senator Ted Cruz has made clear very many times was a bill designed to give the Democrats greater power and never lose an election. The man in the state of Texas who prosecutes 58% of the OAG, that's the Office of Attorney General's election fraud prosecutions, he notes, are related to mail ballot fraud. Attorney General Ken Paxton is our guest. General Paxton, it looks like H.R. 1 is going to die and not be passed. Why is that good for us?
I can't tell you how happy that makes me. That to me was one of the absolute most anti-democratic bills that I have ever seen, because it would have enshrined in code, in statute, in law, things that allow for voter fraud right and left, from ballot harvesting to massive mail-in ballots to allowing felons to vote. Everything you can do in Texas to protect elections, that bill would have tried to undo. And it was, I think,
General, we're losing you. I don't know if you're on the road or just in a bad spot. General Paxton?
Yeah. Yes, can you hear me?
We lost that. We lost the last part of that answer. If you,
I just said it
down.
Would have put us in a position where voters would have had no confidence in the elections, and I think less people would be voting because they would actually not trust the election.
That's exactly what has happened consistently around the world, is when you build in integrity for the system, more people vote. That is exactly right. When you see mail ballot fraud that your office, the Attorney General's office, is prosecuting, how is that generally carried out?
I mean, it's typically people filling out ballots, massive number of ballots for people that don't even know they're voting. And because there's no voter, there's no photo ID associated with it. And in Texas, you have a signature verification, but a lot of times that's hard to prove it's not the right signature. And so it tends to be a pretty easy way, if you want to commit fraud, it tends to be a pretty easy way to do it. And it's really hard for us to go find it. We have to somehow have somebody tell us about it, because we don't know that people are doing this. Unless somebody reports them, it's very difficult to find it. So it's a very efficient way to do it, and it's hard for us to end up, you know, discovering it if they're doing it.
You have noted that the Biden administration's policies with regard to illegal immigration are hitting Texas very hard, and that the primary beneficiary is the cartels. Why do you say that?
So the cartels are making a fortune off of this, because they charge, I mean, to cross the border, you pretty much have to pay them. And I know the lowest cost I've heard is about $4,000 per person. In some places, the average is $8,000. It goes up to $50,000. Meanwhile, so these poor people that are coming here, their only way in is to be relying on the cartel. So I don't think that's a very good way for them to have to come to this country. Even if we decided that everyone from, you know, Central America should be allowed into our country, it's a really bad way for them to have to do it. On the other hand, the cost to Texans and the cost to the United States for illegal immigration, both social and economic, the higher crime rates, and just the economic cost of having to pay for it all, is tremendous. So there's really no upside to anybody you'd want an upside to, except the cartels who are making billions of dollars off of transporting people. And then because the border's more open, because Border Patrol is so busy with the logistics of people, they're now getting more drugs through and they're making more money on drugs.
Yeah, I read a story, I can't remember where, but it quoted one of the sector chiefs. It wasn't Rio Grande, it was maybe Laredo. And he said it's their estimation that the cartels are making more off of human trafficking now through this illegal immigration than they are drugs, which is the first time that that would be the case. I guess it's hard to know. But the fact that there's even a conversation being had tells you how big this deal is for them.
Absolutely. If you just think about the numbers, like if the lowest cost is $4,000 per person, but the average is probably more like, $10,000. And these people are probably having to pay to get moved around in the country, and then the cartels have hooks into them because they can't all pay. So then they become, usable for other things in the country. I mean, I don't even know. The numbers are probably astronomical for them, and it probably is now more profitable than the drug trade.
The Masterpiece Cake Shop owner has been hit again by the Colorado Commission there, and they're wanting him to make a cake that is a picture of Satan smoking a joint. He doesn't believe in smoking pot, and of course he's a Christian. That Masterpiece case gave a lot of religious liberty protections, and then we saw a case, the one out of Philadelphia with the Catholic Church there this week, which I think narrowly protected religious liberty. What happens in the state of Texas if somebody walks in and says, hey, I want you to make me a cake for a gay wedding, and the owner says, I'm sorry, I'll make you any other cake, but I won't make that? What would happen?
So both of those cases you mentioned, the one with the Colorado case with Jack, and then the one in Philadelphia, we were part of both amicus briefs and led in both of those cases. And so I believe today that that's the law, that people have a right to their religious views, and that if somebody doesn't want to make a cake because it's against their religious views, they are not obligated to do it. So I'm not saying they won't get sued. Unfortunately, as you mentioned, in Colorado, they're abusive, and they for some reason feel like entitled to force people to go against their religious views. But that's not the law in America. It never has been.
And you think that the state of Texas not pushing the way the state of Colorado is would give you more protections in Texas, because it's not federal regulations or federal regulators that are causing these people problems in Colorado. It's the local and the state.
That's exactly right. And if we heard about it, we would definitely let people know. We would find a way into a case like that. If somebody was persecuting somebody because of their religious beliefs, we would absolutely, and we've done it many times over. We've been involved in probably since I've been in office, way more religious liberty cases than I ever anticipated, probably 25 or 30, even in Texas.
Wow. You know, the media will often say, and the Democrats will often say, you folks keep talking about abuse in elections, in the process, that there's fraud. Point to some cases. So if I were to ask you to point to some cases, how big is this in our ability to prosecute it? And I may have to cut you off because we're going to be close to break. But if I do, can you hang with me?
Yeah, absolutely.
I also want to ask you to respond to the fact that Jeb Bush's son is saying very nasty things about you and has announced he's going to be running against you. Get your response coming up.
The Michael Berry Show. This is The Michael Berry Show.
At the only joint in town, she had a reputation as a girl who'd been around. Down Main Street after midnight, brand new pack of six, a fresh one hanging from her lips, a beer between her legs. She'd ride down to the river and meet with all her friends. The road goes on forever and the party never ends.
Attorney General Ken Paxton is our guest. General Paxton, the left often says that while we complain about fraud in the electoral process, we don't seem to be able to prove that it's actually happening. But your office does do that. How big a problem is this, and how many cases can you bring?
Okay, it's huge. We only have 3 full-time prosecutors. When I started, we had 1. We have more cases in the pipeline. We have hundreds of cases in the pipeline right now that we were not able to take to court because of COVID. COVID slowed us down. The court shut down for almost a year, and now we're not a priority because they're taking the violent offender cases first. And so we're still waiting, but we've got hundreds of cases. We've got more cases than we've ever had. The numbers are staggering. So we definitely have cases where we think voter fraud has been committed, and that's with limited resources and limited time. We still have more cases than we can handle. So if I had more resources, I'm convinced we'd be bringing more voter fraud cases than we already have.
When you see these cases, what is the hallmark? What is the tell that this is fraud? Is it the same signature on a bunch of these? Is it a witness that comes forward? I mean, what's the basis for these cases? How can you tell?
Well, both of those, and every case, that's what's so challenging about these cases. They're all very fact specific. We can't just, people will report fraud to me and they want me to just file a lawsuit and, you know, take somebody to court and try to put them in prison. We actually have to go out and investigate. I send investigators out. They spend sometimes, you know, more than a year doing the investigation. Sometimes we're working in counties, shockingly, that won't help us. And so we have to do a lot of it on our own. These cases are real work, and they're all very fact specific, and they're people do it in different ways. You know, the easiest case we had was Veritas brought us this video of this woman admitting on tape, you probably saw it, that she had been involved in 7,000 different fraudulent votes in that one election cycle. We don't use yet it that easy, but that one was as easy as it gets.
General Paxton, we're losing you again. General Paxton, are you there? Did we lose the line or just not it? Okay.
Michael?
Yep, there we are. We lost you for a minute there.
Sorry about that. I'm driving to San Antonio from Houston.
That's all right. I want to ask you, because I want to give you a chance to respond. George P. Bush, Jeb's son, has been saying some pretty nasty things about you and wants to take your job. Does that surprise you? How do you respond?
You know, no. I mean, I think he's trying to escape the general land office. You know, we all know the slogan, remember the Alamo. Well, that's something he didn't remember. And I think he's running from that Alamo project. He's running from the fact that he didn't do his job doling out disaster funds from the hurricane. Houston initially got almost nothing, which is shocking. And I don't understand that. I wish he would explain his own job before he starts criticizing me. But I'm happy to talk about my record in fighting the Biden administration, the Obama administration, big tech, going after Backpage.com on human trafficking, and fighting for election integrity both nationally with our lawsuit against those 4 states or locally where we're pursuing voter fraud every day. So I'd rather focus on what I've done and let him, if he has anything to talk about, hopefully he can talk about what he's done, which so far I haven't seen much of.
What are you working on right now? What are the biggest areas of focus for the Texas Attorney General?
The biggest areas are related to the Biden administration and dealing with immigration. And we've sued them over the Keystone Pipeline. We're on constant, they've sued us over our Medicaid program. So much of what we're doing right now is dealing with the federal government overreach and their ignoring of federal law and the Constitution and trying to abuse Texans. That's a huge part of what we're doing. We've got the largest antitrust case in the history, literally the country, against Google, and we have likely other lawsuits against tech companies coming. And then we've continued to focus on human trafficking and then election integrity and fraud. So those are kind of the big areas that I'm focused on because I think those are the ones that matter to Texans. And with our limited budget, our limited resources, I want to focus on things that really matter to the state. And some of these things matter to the entire country.
You said something that you're not the first one to say. This has been talked about a lot. You said that George P. Bush, quote, he's kind of got this mentality that he's going to be president someday and he's got to get started. I remember when he was first announcing that he was going to run, the announcement was he was going to run for something He just had to decide what it was going to be. And that did not sit well with me. It's as if he is entitled, because his last name is Bush and he's Hispanic, it's as if he's entitled to this office and this stair-stepping. And I find that a lot of the rich Republicans, the sort of country club class that you know, pine for his grandfather, they go along with this. It, you know, that he looks the part, that he's Hispanic. We got to have Hispanics because his mother happens to be Hispanic. And there's just something to me very off-putting about everything related to this. It's everything we don't stand for.
I feel exactly the same way. I don't feel like he has the same values that I do, that most Texans, at least most Republicans, care about. And I feel like, you know, he was, for the longest time, he was running for lieutenant governor against Dan Patrick. He talked about running for governor among some people. It just seemed like he was just trying to pick the place that, you know, allowed him to take the next step to move up the ladder. And, you know, the reality is he just got his law license back in October. Hasn't practiced, I think, for almost 10 years, and only briefly practiced before then. So this is a real legal job. I mean, this is probably the largest law firm in the country or in the state, and we have 4,200 employees, almost 800 lawyers, and we deal with real issues. And if you don't know much about the law, you're like a rookie on the law, then you're going to have trouble doing this job. And if you can't manage the land office, you certainly shouldn't step up and try to run this one.
It's going to be interesting to watch, because many of our listeners closely watched what happened with the Alamo. And I'll tell you what, they were ready to run him out on a rail, tar and feather that man. I mean, really angry at how he handled that. And I don't think the folks that have made a passionate pursuit of preserving the Alamo are going to sit idly by while he seeks a higher office. I think that's going to be an interesting thing to observe.
Well, and he's not going to want to answer questions about that, because there's so much. He's answered so many questions. More important monument that we have in Texas in the Alamo, and it appears like he's trying to give it away to other people, and he's moving away from the history that some of us care about in Texas, because he came from Florida. He didn't really know the history. But I think Texans, and even people that have moved here, care about the Alamo and that it be preserved in a way that represents what actually happened there, not some globalist rendition of history that doesn't really tell the real story of what happened at the Alamo.
Well, maybe he'll put an exclamation mark after his name to get people more excited. We shall see. Attorney General Ken Paxton, keep up the good work, sir.
Hey, thanks a lot, Michael. Have a great day.
All right, bud. And today is a very special day for me, because it is the birthday of two people who I admire very, very much. Actually, I guess three people that I admire very, very much. One who I love and adore. Another who, well, I guess I could say I love also, and absolutely respect on an incredible level as well. And then one of the two most influential writer thinkers in alive today. I'll tell you who they are coming up.
The Michael Berry Show.
Well, three of my favorite people in the whole world were all born on June 23rd. About 10 years ago, Walton and Johnson were looking for a new producer. And they landed on a guy who came down to Houston from Chicago, where he was producing the Man Cow Show. Mancal Muller is the guy's name. At one point, he had a syndicated show from a network called Talk Radio Network, TRN. It's defunct now. But he was on quite a few stations. And Mancal was at one point the Howard Stern of Chicago. He was big. I still keep up with him. He has a very close friendship with Joel Osteen. He used to have Joel Osteen on. His show might have Joel Osteen on. It's kind of a Joe Rogan radio show with a lot of production. So he would have people on that might have been on Coast to Coast, that might be on Alex Jones, that might be without a real heavy political bent. But they were doing a lot of interesting things, and most of the country didn't know who he was because he was the big show in Chicago. In the way that in radio, to a greater degree than you do now, you'd have a show that dominated a city, but was really, you know, from that city. And that's what Mancal was. And when Mancal would fly out to Portland, which is where, what's his name? Mark McCormick. Mark, I can't remember the guy's name who owned Talk Radio Network. When he syndicated Mancal to put him on Talk instead of FM mornings, they would fly Kenny out and Mancal out, and he was known within TRN as Mancal and the Brow, because producer Kenny has very thick eyebrows, good Italian heritage on his mom's side. And so he's got this. He's got a thick head of hair and these thick eyebrows. He comes to Houston, joins the Walton and Johnson show, and a week into him being in the building, you had to notice, because he's loud, because he is extremely creative. If you hear a parody on our show, there's a 90% or more chance that Ken Webster Jr., producer Kenny, produced it. Even though he may not voice that particular one, he writes them. We've got a whole team of people who help us with voices. He sends the email out and says, hey, read this way and do this. Everybody emails it back, and then he builds a parody. It doesn't sound that hard. But if I were to play for you a parody that we did, and I showed you on a screen what it looks like, how many layers went into that, every sound effect, everything that goes in. And he does that all day. He gets into the studio about 3 o'clock in the morning. He works his tail off producing, used to produce Walton and Johnson. Now he co-hosts it. When John Walton passed, Steve Johnson wanted him to step in rather than have somebody from the outside come in. Those are big, big shoes to fill. John Walton had been in radio on the Gulf Coast for 35 years. I mean, that's a show that I used to listen to before I was doing morning shows. That's the show that I would listen to in the mornings because they were so funny. And to step into those shoes, even though you've been producing it, to go from the other side of the glass to behind the microphone, that's a tall order. And he has done it. I don't think they've lost a single affiliate. They've probably added more. So he produces and then hosts the Walton and Johnson Morning Show. He does all of our parodies and all of theirs. And then in the afternoons, he does a show called Pursuit of Happiness Radio. It's incredible. And he still probably does more live appearances than anybody in our building. Anyway, happy birthday to Ken Webster Jr., a.k.a. The host of Pursuit of Happiness, a.k.a. the co-host of Walton and Johnson, and as he will always be to me, producer Kenny, even though he doesn't just produce any longer, he also does his own show. Great guy, dear friend, and contributes a lot to our show. Plenty that you don't ever see, but just trust me, if you like our show, you can thank producer Kenny because he's a part of making that happen. And then there is one of the two greatest writer thinkers alive today. Clarence Thomas turned 73. This is a man who was raised very poor, who rose through hard work, sheer determination, to a seat on the Supreme Court where, along with Antonin Scalia, he anchored for almost 30 years till Scalia passed. They were the two stalwarts on that court. And now he carries the banner himself. He threatens every year that this is going to be his last session, that he's going to step down. And when he does, it's going to be a great, great loss to America. But both he and Thomas Sowell were raised very poor black men at a time of segregation, at a time when it was much harder as a black man, just based on your skin, not only because you grew up poor or whatever else, it was harder. There's no doubt in that. It took a long time to break some of those stereotypes. And this was a guy who, despite it all, with a smile on his face, rose to the highest levels, and he is by far the most important justice on the Supreme Court today. People who know the Supreme Court, who follow the Supreme Court, will tell you this is the Thomas Court. This is Clarence Thomas's court. You don't do anything without looking and seeing what he's going to do first, because he is the intellectual foundation of this court. Between him and Thomas Sowell, you have the two most important thinker writers alive today. Both men raised poor, black, rose to the highest ranks of influence. Neither one sought wealth, financial wealth. Both of whom have an influence that will extend for 100 years. Both of whom called the nastiest names by the left and just ignored by intellectuals. 73rd birthday. Happy birthday, Clarence Thomas. And I saved the best for last. Coming up.
This is the Michael Berry Show.
How fine was Vanessa Williams? Ooh. She was so fine she had to marry a man named Fox just to take his last name. You know what ruined it for me with Vanessa Williams? Do you know? What? Yes. Why is that funny? She didn't need to do that. Did she need the money? Did you see the ad? Did you want to see her all broke out like a pizza face? I didn't like to think of her like that. I didn't need her to tell me that all those years I was lusting after her, she had makeup caked over big old busted up zits. I'm about to talk about my mother, so I'm not gonna give advice to women. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Ladies, let me explain something to you. If a man gives you a compliment and you feel uncomfortable accepting it because you know that deep down those aren't your lashes, or if he sees your right hand nails looking nice and you know that on your left hand nail you got a pinky nail that came off, just make a fist and say thank you so he doesn't have to see it and go, well, this no hair needs to be redone. Why do y'all do that? We know you're not perfect, okay? We know you're not perfect. We don't think you're perfect. But you don't have to list your imperfections. If a man tells you you look nice, Emily, our assistant, comes in. This is a month or two ago. And she had just colored her hair. And Ramon said, Emily, your hair looks nice. And she said, it's filthy. I haven't washed it in a week. I said, Emily, why do y'all do that? You don't need to do that. because women don't know how to take compliments, and they know that they're fighting gravity and age and everything else. I guess I should tell y'all, in case there's somebody out there that doesn't know, Proactive must have spent a fortune, and they went out and hired all these good-looking people to say, I used to have a busted-up zit face, but Proactive fixed it. And then they show these just hideous pictures of themselves, just hideous pustules on their face. But now I'm here for Proactive, and they did them as infomercials. I think on some of these cable TV stations or lineups, I think they got a whole station. Not even kidding. They did round the clock. They did Adam Levine, that dude from Maroon 5 with all the tattoos. They did Vanessa Williams. And who was the other one? It was like Cindy Crawford or Brooke Shields or somebody. Now, look, I wasn't mad at Vanessa Williams when she decided to go naked for Playboy. And they stripped her of her crown because we got to see Vanessa Williams naked. I understand. And you don't make very much money as Miss America. So they had, you know, she wanted to cash in while she could. That's fine. Nobody's mad at her for that. But she didn't need to. I don't care how much they paid her for that zit commercial. She didn't need to ruin it. She didn't need to ruin it for me on that. Anyway, the third birthday. Producer Kenny, Clarence Thomas, and the triumvirate for me on June 23rd is my sweet, sweet mother, Loretta Marzella Sieber Berry. Sieber was her maiden name. That's my, that's the German side of our German-Irish family. My grandmother's side was Irish. My grandfather's side was German and American Indian. But anyway, she turns 76 years old today, and she is a very, very special lady. I had her on, I think, Mother's Day. And for those of you who heard it, I said, if I'm bragging on you to somebody about being a great mom, what do you think is the first thing I brag on? And she said that I inspired in you a love of reading. And that is absolutely true. If you heard the call yesterday from the black fella, I can't remember his name. Was it Chris Ramon from Texas City? Do you remember? He was what white people will sometimes awkwardly say of black people, articulate. He was a guy who was very thoughtful in his answers. And he's a guy who's had a journey, you could tell. Talking about being raised by a single mom. She was a nurse for 41 years. His grandfather was very involved. His grandfather was a truck driver. And the influence that his mom and his strict mom, which you could tell he had a lot of appreciation and love for her, and his grandfather who had been, you know, been there for him. But he said that as a child that he grew up, he said, I grew up like every other black kid, except I read all the time. I got to tell you that... that is the thing that of all the many gifts my parents gave me, and I don't mean physical gifts that you can buy. I mean love, discipline, respect, leading by example, providing. Of all the gifts, one of them, I mean, I guess the others have more to do with your personality, but in terms of to the extent that I have been successful in various endeavors, it is because nothing scares me that I can't learn it because I can go and read about it. Now I have shifted as I've gotten older and my eyes have gotten older and my schedule's gotten packed. And I now use the verbal or audible form of information accumulation, but it's the same thing. I'm finishing Thomas Sowell's Basic Economics right now, which is the third time I've gone through it. And then I'm going into Thomas Sowell's biography that Jason Riley wrote that we had him on a few weeks ago. I can't wait. It's the first biography of Sowell that's ever been written. But a love of learning, and it was reading when I was a kid, and now I watch YouTube videos, and I listen to Audible, and I listen to podcasts. A love of learning. You know, everything we do is derivative of somebody else, whether we realize it or not. We are learning habits from the people around us, and I would like to think that 100 years after I'm gone, if I've done anything good and left a legacy through my kids and grandkids, it is a continuation of what Loretta Marzella Berry has taught me and done for me. So if you know my sweet mother, wish her a happy birthday. A big thanks to Ricky Martinez that owns Tia Juanita's. He called her last night and told her she had to come to dinner at Tia Juanita's tonight for her birthday. And she said, Mr. Martinez, I'm going to tell you the truth and you're going to think I'm lying. She will not lie. She's the most honest person I've ever met. I will not lie. Two nights ago, I dreamed about the shrimp quesadillas. That is my mother. Doesn't that sound like something Amy would say or your mom, Ramon?